Hi, this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. This is Bill Arnold today, sitting in for Susie Larson. Like I said last hour, maybe this is Susie Larson with a bad sinus infection. And if that's the case, I would feel very sorry for her. But we have got a wonderful show. If you listen, the first hour, we had Andy McQuitty on. He wrote a book called Notes from the Valley. Fascinating book on his struggle through his stage 4 cancer. And on today's hour, we have with us Dr. Glenn Pickering, who's a leading Christian psychologist. He provides transformational counseling services to thousands of people, couples, and he's written a tag-related book, tag being the game you play on the playground where you try to make the other person it, and then you try to avoid that person so they don't tag you. There's the misery, the problem that most people have in relationships is that's the game they play, whether they know it or not. And he and his wife, Gwen, have created seminars, and they have got insights and real-life examples and concrete strategies for helping people transform their life. And you can find his page at myfaithradio.com. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You are a regular guest on Real Recovery. You've got incredible insight to how people deal with addiction, and we love having you on our show, and it's great to have you on Live the Promise today. Susie always likes to start off by asking a guest to share a piece of scripture. So I know you must be loaded up with something. And if
yes,
you don't have one, I will provide one for you, and then you can talk about that.
Well, actually, I thought we probably would lead off with one of my favorite scriptures, which comes out of the first chapter of James, where James says we're supposed to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. And I think when we get in conflictual kind of situations, especially in relationships that are kind of the relationships that make us a little crazy, which is what I want to talk about today, we tend to do pretty much the opposite of all three of those. We kind of stop listening, we talk way too much, and we get to anger way too quickly, and it keeps us from actually moving through that conflict in any way that's actually helpful to us.
So I asked Glenn, I said, Glenn, what should we talk about? And he said, I want to talk about relationships from crazy to happy.
Right. How do you go from those relationships
that's
that are
the
making
theme.
You crazy
and
to
we've
happy?
Only, we've only got an hour. I don't know, have any idea how we're going to do this, but we're going to go from crazy to happy. So I appreciate your James 1:19-20 verse. And our listeners always want to get a little bit of a backstory on your
sure.
own faith journey and what and how you came to Christ.
Well, you know, I was raised, I've been a Christian since before I knew what that meant. And so my story is not so much a sudden, wow, my life changed at this moment. It's been more this long, gradual journey of understanding more and more and more deeply what it really means to be called to live a faithful life. And not just to live that faithful life internally, like making sure that I'm lined up with God's Spirit, but living that life externally to make sure I bring that Spirit with me in all that I do. And that's just been a really, really long and interesting process for me. And I didn't start off with any special insight, I can tell you that. I talk to people sort of jokingly about being autistic, but I'm not sure it's actually all that far from being true. When I was a kid, I didn't talk out loud in school until I was in the second grade. Nothing. If my teacher would ask me a question, I'd nod my head. And so I was just really quiet. I mean, I was a really shy kid, so I didn't talk to a lot of people. And, you know, I had a really curved spine and wore thick Coke bottle glasses, so let's just say nobody really went out of their way to talk to me either. So it's really, really, I say this to people. It's really, really important to understand you can do any of the things I teach you, because if I could do them, anybody can do them.
Yeah, well, You deal with a lot of people that come into your office, couples that have severe conflict.
Yes, of one sort or another, yes.
Yeah, we would call it, how are we going to get through this? How is this going to work? Can we save this relationship?
Sure. And oftentimes it is couples that come to see me. Sometimes it's parents with their kids. Sometimes it's people at the workforce. So mostly I get called in when there's a person who, if they're going to just tell the truth, they would say to me, Glenn, there's at least one relationship in my life that's just crazy making for me, that literally makes me feel crazy. Like, I don't get it. No matter what I do, it doesn't work right.
And then why do we have conflicts? I mean, is it just pure selfishness? It's like, this is my view and my view is right, and you don't conform. You're not me, so I have problems with everybody who isn't me. Is that the case for most people?
Honestly, we have conflicts in part. Well, you know, I talk to people a lot about the thing I talk about in my book called, you know, Tag Your It, about how we get in relationships if we're not careful, where instead of being in the right relationship, our goal becomes to not be the bad one, to not be the one who's it, to not be the one who's at fault. And oftentimes when people say, well, Glenn, I have this need to be right, I think, no, see, you have this need to be not wrong, to not be the bad one. And so you make the other person the bad one in that process, which is part of what makes them crazy.
So I think we have to go back and review that. It's not that you need to be right.
Right.
You just have to make sure you're not one of the people that's wrong.
Right.
That's confusing.
Yeah, it is sort of. And that's why I find the game of tag, that analogy, helpful. Because in that game, you're not actually trying to win. I mean, in fact, in that game, there is no way to win.
Mm-hmm.
You're not actually trying to win or to accomplish anything. You're just trying not to be the one that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And we use passive strategies, all the things we do to avoid getting it in the first place. And then we use active strategies. Well, once we are it, then we want to reach out and tag somebody else. So once again, we're not it. And
mm-hmm.
the whole goal is to not be it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get in relationships that are not functioning right, I promise you that's what we're actually doing. We're just trying not to be it, not to be the bad one, not to be the one who's wrong.
Mm-hmm. There's more than two kinds of it. There's also frozen it, isn't there?
Right, when I talk about passive and active strategies, for example, let's say you're at a meeting and somebody says, hey, anybody have any ideas about this? And you have some ideas, but you don't say them out loud. Well, that's what I would call frozen tag. Like, you're playing tag passively. You're not trying to make anybody else it. You just don't want to be it yourself. So you don't share your idea because you don't want to get criticized or you don't want to be wrong. And that's so people keep their actual true self to themselves.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, can we talk about an actual tag-playing scenario?
Sure.
Is it like, let's see if we can come up with a situation where the wife says to the husband, you're going to make us late again.
Right.
And then he says, well, you know, if you didn't spend so much time in the bathroom and gave me some time,
right,
I could get in and out a lot faster.
Right.
And then it just keeps escalating from there.
Right.
You go back and forth.
Right. You just go back and forth, making the other person, like, to
it.
Blame.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Now you're it.
Right.
Now the fault is not on me anymore.
Right. And here's what doesn't happen then in any of those conversations: resolution or transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, God is really, really interested in reconciliation and in transformation, and you don't have to read very many pages of the scriptures to notice that that's true. So if the wife says, hey, hon, we're running late, we often do that. How could we do that differently in the future?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, how could we talk together to figure out a better way? That's not tag playing. That's just a great way to interact with one another.
Mm-hmm.
But so often when there's a problem, we don't actually look for the we solution. We just want to not be to blame for the problem. And so then we make the other person to blame for the problem, and they get all defensive because they feel attacked because they are.
Mm-hmm. So we're always obsessed with our own piece of the puzzle.
Right.
Not so much as how the team functions, but
right,
just get me off the hook.
Right, get me off the hook. I don't want to be the bad one. Now, and here's why, and anytime we're in what we would call a crazy-making relationship, that really is how we're thinking. So maybe I'll just set us up for our next segment by saying this. When people come into my office with a relationship that's making them crazy, I say to them, I totally understand. Now, here's what you're not going to like to hear. You're in this crazy-making relationship because you yourself are half crazy. Right. That's the best reaction I get. I get different ones.
Yeah.
Now, you can understand that this might make me a little unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not careful, the other person will hear me as saying, you are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, no, you are exactly half of that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and Jesus said, you know, why do you see the speck in your brother's eye? You can't see the log in your own eye. So scripturally, it's really, really clear. We're not supposed to be focused on what the other person's doing wrong and making them the bad one. We're supposed to just take an honest and discerning look at our behavior and ask ourselves, how could I do that differently? But it's shocking to me how many people, even really serious Christians, come into my office, they're upset about a crazy-making relationship in their life, and the only thing they can see is what the other person is doing wrong.
So, but let's say, for example, the other person is 80% wrong, and legitimately so. How do we divide that math?
You can't, because it's never true.
Okay. it's always going to be 50-50.
It always is going to be 50-50.
Oh, that's not going to go well with
our
listeners.
I promise you there are at least a high percentage of people, I'll just say, who come to my office who are really, really convicted that them. And when they hear me talk about 50-50, they're really upset. In fact, this just happened to me today. I was doing counseling with a couple who have seen me a few times. One of them is really, really quite sure that the other one is totally the problem. And if they would just get it together, then everything would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, when I talk about 50-50, how they each have a half of that, there's each something each of them need to do differently. For them, those words don't sound liberating, although they're supposed to be.
But they don't sound liberating.
No, they sound to them like blaming or judging. But see, it is so liberating if we really get it. Because if I really look at my wife, Gwen, and think, okay, this is all your fault. You have to get it together. That means there's nothing I can do to make it better.
And that's not fair, is it?
Well, no, and it's powerless. It means there's nothing I can do. You know what I mean? So I'm sort of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But once I really get, no, honestly, it's totally 50-50. See, it's supposed to be. I think this is why Jesus said, see the speck in the log in your own eye. It's supposed to be liberating to just think, oh, I get it. This is partly about me. And if I would just start doing my half differently, this thing would shift, which, of course, it always will.
Yeah. We're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering in studio today. He's written a book called, several books, on tag-related activity, which is the number one problem in relationships. If you have a question for him, and if you are in a crazy relationship and want to figure out how to go from crazy to happy, you can give us a call. We'll try to sort it out for you. That number is 1-877-933-2484. We're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie Larson. Thanks for being with us. Be back in a minute.
Dear younger me, where do I start? If I could tell you everything that I have learned so far, then you could be one step ahead of all the painful memories still running through my head.
Welcome back to Live the Promise. Boy, Susie's got such good music. Nice job, Susie. If you listen to Real Recovery Sunday nights at 5, you hear a lot of retro 70s rock, kind of where I'm stuck. Bill Arnold sitting in today for Susie, and we have in studio Dr. Glenn Pickering, and we're talking about relationships from crazy to happy. We're going to accomplish that all in 1 hour.
That's right.
I
and
find
we have
very
to
exciting.
Fast for 45
yes.
minutes left.
And one of the things I think we have to start doing, or you have to stop doing, is listening to your friends because they're all not right. They're all wrong, aren't they? Your friends
so
are all
true.
Wrong.
That's right.
And you get the worst advice from them, don't you?
Well, right, because our friends are so likely, even the well-meaning ones, when they're honestly trying to be like on our team and helpful to us, are very likely to tell us two pieces of advice that are always wrong. For example, if a woman calls a female friend or a guy calls her male friend complaining about the other person in their marriage or complaining about a job or complaining about a coworker or complaining about a boss, they're very likely to hear, well, why don't you just get a different job? Why don't you just get out of that relationship? Why don't you just, you know, basically, why don't you just leave, really, is sort of their first piece of knee-jerk advice. And I realize they're actually trying to protect us and they're actually trying to take care of us in a way. So I don't want to be, like, critical of that advice. But it's important to understand that is really not helpful advice. Because if every time I get to a place in a relationship where I'm stuck with my kid, with my spouse, with a coworker, with my boss, and every time I get stuck, then I just leave that relationship or leave that job or leave that place, then whatever it is that God's trying to teach me, any transformation that's supposed to happen there never happens. I just start over with some other place and some other job, and eventually I'm going to hit that same place where I get stuck, and then I'm just going to leave there.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this knee-jerk tendency on our friends and family to say, well, just get out, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so not helpful to us.
Okay, now let me ask you this, because I heard you say this years ago, life is not a popularity contest, it's a treasure hunt.
Right.
So spend time with the people you treasure. How much time should we be spending with people in this dysfunction or this coworker that you're just not getting along with. You go, am I supposed to learn something here or am I supposed to find a new job because maybe that I'll be happier?
Right. And I always think to myself, when Jesus sends out the disciples two by two, he tells them, don't take an extra cloak, don't take an extra pair of sandals with you, because he doesn't want them to go into the towns that he sends them into with an exit strategy. He doesn't want them to go to that town thinking, yeah, I'll try it here, we'll see. But if it doesn't work, I don't care. I got more food. I got more sandals. I can, you know, I can just go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
He wants them to go into that town and give it their whole self, their absolute best shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, if they hear you, great, then stay. But if they don't, you know, then shake the dust off your feet and move on.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody says, Glenn, I'm thinking about leaving my job, leaving my colleague, leaving my spouse, leaving whatever, my first question is going to be, have you given that your absolute best shot? Because if you haven't, and if I haven't figured out what my half of that problem is, I have not given that my best shot.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even given it a shot at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so my friends might say, well, just get out of that job or get a different job or leave that relationship. See, their first question ought to be, Glenn, what do you think your half of that is?
Mm-hmm. Well, Glenn, we've got a caller on the line.
Oh,
it's usually against my better judgment to take calls. Usually I would do that. But we've got Joseph on the line from Minneapolis. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
We're living it up.
I was calling because I heard what he was saying about doing the 50-50 thing, and I've done that. And, like, for me and my wife right now, we're at the point where we're talking about divorce, and, I mean, there's no more passion in either one of us about everything that's been going on. And, you know, I've done the 50-50 thing. A lot of times it's arguments about ways that she think I can be better or what I should be doing, and I've done those things, and I've changed so many different things about myself that sometimes I feel like I don't even recognize who I am anymore. I kind of got to the point where I figured out changing wasn't going to fix the problem. So I stopped changing, and I'm kind of going back to who I was when we first met, and that's not making her happy. And, you know, so we're at the point where we're talking about divorce, and I've always looked at it as, okay, what can I do for me? And I don't know what else I could do from that point. And I just wanted to hear your insight on that.
My first thought is, I'm sad to hear that. So, one, know that I feel for you. Second, I'm proud that you would work so hard at trying to get your part right. I think that's admirable, and I have a lot of respect for anybody who would work that hard on a relationship. My third thought is, do you know what she actually wants? Does she know what she wants? So, because I think you've been talking about strategies. Well, here's what I mean. A friend of mine, her little girl is on a soccer team along with a bunch of other little girls. And so the moms of these girls were having a big conversation about, should they just hire a regular coach? Should they get a professional coach? Should they have the kids do, you know, training and exercise, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, what's your goal? And they looked at me oddly. But see, here's what I understood. They were talking about a strategy, except a strategy to accomplish what? Until I get what the goal is. I mean, if the goal is my kid to have fun, well, heck, one of the moms could probably coach the team. If my goal is to turn these kids into D1 soccer players, well, then we probably need a professional coach. But you got to be clear, what's the goal?
Yeah.
So I keep thinking as you're talking, what do you want and what does she want? Not what changes are being asked about and not what strategies are being talked about. What do you want?
Okay. I know what I want. I want us to be a family, and I want us all to be happy.
Okay. And describe that picture for us. Tell us what happy looks like.
The kids are learning and they're succeeding in school and preparing to become adults and succeeding at that. And, you know, me and her are happy, and
I want to know. Draw that picture for me. Me and her are happy. What does that look like?
I guess going out to dinner once a week, seeing a movie whenever we can, traveling whenever we feel like it, or on our anniversary or whatever, and just happy time, you know, being able to share with one another our feelings and what's going on.
Right. And when you come home, what do you see? What does that picture look like? When I come home, it looks like this.
When I come home, typically she's, if she is there, she's watching TV, If she's not there, you know, she's picked up extra shift at work or something to that effect to work or, you know, those type of things. So typically when I come home, I'm with the kids, and then after that, we're watching a movie or something and getting ready for dinner and bed.
Well, it just sounds to me like you, that the two of you have spent a lot of time sort of trying to make the family work and trying to be there for the kids and trying to make the kids work. But I can't tell that the two of you spent a lot of time making the two of you work.
Okay.
It sounds like that's something. Yeah, it sounds like that's something that, you know, hopefully we'll pray that that can be your reality, that you can get things working with her.
Right.
Yeah.
And I still just really wonder, what does she want? I'm guessing you get a whole list of what she doesn't want.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and, I have a massive list of that.
Right, and I see that so often in women. When you ask them what they want, they tell you what they don't want. But it's really, really important to have a clear picture of what we do want. When it says in Proverbs, without a vision, that people shall perish, I think we need a really clear picture of what we do want.
Mm-hmm.
And when Jesus says in Matthew 7, ask and it shall be given unto you, he doesn't say ask for what you don't want.
Yeah.
We have to be clear what we do want. And I would just really, really urge the two of you to really give that some prayerful thought. What do we want?
Great. Joe, thanks for calling. I hope you got something to think about, and good luck, and we'll pray for you. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. I think we got a little bit of time left here before the break. We have a heartbreak coming up in a few minutes. We have another caller on the line. Debbie's calling in from Seattle. Debbie, welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
We're good. We're really good.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I just happened to turn on the internet, which I've never ever listened to your program before, and there you were, and it's exactly what I needed to hear. So
yeah, what did you need to
love? Don't you love dumb luck?
Yeah,
it's almost like there really is a
or something.
I know, or something. Yeah.
Hey, well, what's going on with me is that my daughter is 19. And she just came home from Youth with a Mission in Australia and Papua New Guinea, and has always indicated that she wants to, you know, do something really wonderful with her life, which she's been thrilled with, of course. She had some, like every teenager, difficult times through her, you know, maybe 12 through 16 years old. And during that time, she met a fellow online in Austin, Texas, and he's an atheist raised in a Muslim home, and the mother's committed to Islam, and the father is committed to, he's kind of nominal, and that's kind of like my marriage. I'm committed Christian, and my husband confesses Christianity but doesn't go to church, and it's, our marriage is kind of, you know, it exists. And so anyway, my kid came home from her mission trip, and then she suddenly decided, instead of going to Bible college, that she was going to be with this guy in Texas. And she left and went down there for several weeks and didn't have sex with him, but came home and now is deciding that she's going to live with him. But she wants to stay home, and she wants us to pay for at least a year of education. And then she, after that, she's planning on going there.
Debbie, can you hold on with us?
Sure.
On the other side of the break, we'll come back with you, because this is a loaded question you asked, and we'll deal with it. I'm trying to get my timing down. I'm not as good as Susie, and she's so good at getting in and out of the breaks on time. So we're going to take a little break. You're listening to Live the Promise, and not Susie today. It's Bill Arnold sitting in for her. We're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering about relationships from crazy to happy. To Live the Promise, that happy, upbeat music. You will not find any of that on Real Recovery Sundays at 5. Bill Arnold sitting in for Susie Larson. I hope you're not too disappointed. She's not with us today. She's out doing something really cool. I would tell you what it is, but I don't read the memos. Well, they actually don't give them to me around here. So
Well, we can tell you this. She's across the street at the Set Apart Conference.
Okay, cool.
Well, so she's got a few teaching segments over there that she's doing for some people that are at that conference.
Thank you, Matt. You informed me. We're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering today, and we've got a caller, Debbie from Seattle, who right before we went to break, she was describing the struggle she's having with a daughter who is now connecting and wanting to live with a guy who appears to be an atheist, and there's all kinds of problems and I don't know if I specifically got to the question, Debbie, when we went to break. So what is the question?
Well, we are at loggerheads. She's saying that I'm abusing her, which I'm not, because I just have, like, some requirements, like don't be on the Internet all night long talking to him and make a commitment to, you know, at least try to see things in a different light, but she's absolutely mad about this guy. Except when she was with him, she's calling me and telling me she can't live with him, that it's terrible and that she's horrible and feels awful doing it. But when she was, as soon as she got away from him, she was in love with him and can't wait to get back. So she's just confused. And right. I don't know how to, because we have been very, very close.
Right.
So very close all these years.
And so because you're close, I can tell you this. You're missing your role, and here's what I mean.
Uh-huh.
She wants you desperately to be her sounding board.
Uh-huh.
She needs a place where she can say her thoughts out loud with someone who's really mature and a Christian who really she trusts and she knows will always look out for her. But instead, because of your fear, which I totally understand this, so I'm a parent, I get the fear. But instead of being the sounding board, because you're fearful, then you tend to step in and sort of tell her what to do, and like you're going to then force her to do it. But see, what I'm thinking is she's literally begging you to be her sounding board.
Yeah.
And that if
I
you're willing
you're
to
right.
just be the one who just listens, asks questions, pays attention, lets her think out loud, I'm thinking there's a very high probability that she's going to come to a good decision. But if you kind of force her, then she's going to have to come to a bad decision just to, quote unquote, prove to you that you don't run her life.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I think there's a really powerful role here for you because she cares about you and because you are close, where you're the sounding board and you listen and you help her make good decisions. Now, I would strongly suggest that you start your next conversation by apologizing.
Okay.
Not for being wrong, understand, but for coming at it wrong. You know what I mean?
Okay. Right.
For coming across too strong. She's 19. She can make her own decisions. Your job is just to listen, ask questions, pay attention, and help her make good decisions. And when she sees that you're serious about that, that you're not just you're not just saying that, she will then start talking to you about all the things she was talking to you about when she was in Texas.
Right.
And then she will almost undoubtedly come to a way better decision than she will if she thinks she has to react against you just to prove her independence.
Right.
So I want you to actually be on her team.
Okay.
As opposed to running her team, if that makes any sense.
Right. See, I'm not I have been really opposed to him, obviously.
Right. Absolutely.
And I am
reasons, yes.
very concerned, not just because he's an atheist, but he's very insecure, and he attempted suicide, and he says that she's the only thing that makes him feel human, and he invades her privacy by reading her texts and her emails, and
of course he does.
And speaks badly about all of her friends. You know,
he's on the road to success financially. So if you're that sounding board, then when she tells you that he invades her privacy, makes fun of her friends, you just say things like, okay, well, how does that make you feel? How do you want that to be different? How do you set clearer boundaries? What would be a good thing to do here? So you help her think through, so you're actually on her team. A lot of times when people play tag, they're trying to be on her team, but they're really not. People who are really on our team help us think really, really carefully about what we really want.
Okay.
Debbie, thanks so much for calling. It's I hope that gave you some good stuff to think about, and we'll be.
Yeah.
You take care.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Glenn, this is that she gave quite a bit. That's quite a lot on that plate.
Yes.
Yeah, and the whole idea that the safe sounding board is such wonderful wisdom, because you know that's really she needs to figure this out herself, and she needs a trusted safe place to go.
That's what I think.
Yeah,
and it's such a powerful role for parents of adult children to play. In fact, I was just at Grace Church in Eden Prairie a couple weeks ago, I guess, talking about you know, dealing with our adult children. And I think it's so important to understand for our kids, the fact that we're their parent never changes. And whether they're 19 or 29 or 39, they still look at us as the ones that they can come to for clarity, for guidance, to get a sounding board from someone who really knows them inside and out. And it's such a powerful role to play. Now, in our fear, we're tempted instead to step in and tell them what the right answer is. But then we just become one more person that's bossing them around. They quit talking to us instead of using us in this really, really powerful way.
Let's go back to how friends are never right. And I think we need to connect some dots here because we started with friends are never right. And part one of friends are never right was what?
That they just always are going to try to leave, that leave the job, leave the relationship, leave that colleague.
So now part two of friends are never right.
If they don't tell you that, then they're going to jump in and tell you why that other person is bad. So if somebody at work or your kid or your spouse or this person you're going out with has been hurtful to you or insensitive or done something inappropriate or somehow that you got upset, your friends, thinking they're going to be on your team, thinking they're being supportive, are going to jump on and say, yeah, that's terrible. That's awful. How could they do that? I can't believe it. You know what I mean? They're going to like think they're being supportive by basically tagging that other person, that acting like they're bad or they're terrible or they're the one that's wrong. And again, just like the advice that, hey, just leave the relationship is so unhelpful to us because we never learn how to work anything out. Having somebody just be blaming the other person all the time is bad for us in exactly the same way because we still never learn to figure out what's my half of that crazy-making relationship and how could I do that differently.
So that's obviously the one thing that we always have to, whatever relationship we're in, is to say, stop pointing fingers and start with what am I responsible for? What do I bring to the table? What do I what am I causing? What about my behavior is causing this issue in our relationship?
Now, but it's also important not to go the other way because sometimes, just like our friends are always wrong, we're always wrong. And here's what I mean. Just like our friends are likely to jump on the other person and make them bad, in our bad thinking, we're likely to actually think it's all our fault. So we're likely to fall into one of those two wrong ways of thinking. We blame the other person like they're the bad one, or we think it's all our fault. And it's so, so, so important to think, no, this really is 50-50. When Jesus said, don't see the speck in your brother's eye, see the log in your own eye, he wasn't saying my brother doesn't have a speck in his eye. He's just saying that's not where I should start. I should start by asking myself, what's my half of that? Not how is this all my fault, because it probably isn't. How could I do my half differently? That's the powerful Christ-centered question that we need to be always be asking ourselves.
Okay, we're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering, and psychologist. And one of the questions I've been thinking about today, Glenn, is if you are in crazy and you want to get to happy, there's going to be some fights along the way. And how do you fight fair?
That's a darn good question. I think one of the things I teach a lot of the couples that come to see me when they're in conflict is, like, first I'm going to say, okay, it's 50-50. So I want each person to think, okay, what's my half of that? And then once each of us really, really comes to be kind of clear about what's my half of that, here's what we find ourselves doing. We then come up with every reason not to change. And so once I really get past thinking it's all your fault or all my fault, and I really see that part of it's about me and there are some changes I need to make, the first thing I do is start employing every one of my favorite stall tactics. All the reasons why I'm too busy or that's too hard, or I don't know where to start, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Are we talking about my book now?
Bill Arnold, My Life. All right, so, and I think it's important to understand, so first of all, if I'm going to fight fair, I have to ask what my half of that is. Second, I have to notice, and what are all the excuses I've been giving myself over time to not really address my half? Because we tell ourselves lots of quote-unquote logical reasons, but none of them actually make sense. If God has put something on my heart that I need to change, that I need to change, and none of my excuses are going to do it, I have to really be willing to change the things that God shows me that need to be changed, but I will, in that process, bump up against whatever my usual stall tactics are, and I have to be willing to move past that and just really claim, okay, God has put this on my heart. There has to be a reason. I really need to embrace that transformational change that will happen when I start changing my half of that. And it means we're going to have to move past that fear of being vulnerable, of being wrong, of being different, of having to grow. And honestly, those things are scary for us because they're uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, put on the black and white striped ref shirt just
right.
for a minute.
All
You've
right.
entered a living room where there's a couple fighting, and it's probably not a fair fight because they never are. And you stop them mid-fight, and you say to them, what do you want the outcome to be?
Right.
What would they say?
That's a darn good question. Because, see, let's say we're fighting about money or sex or the kids or the in-laws. Who knows? It looks like the conversation is about money or sex or the kids or in-laws. But once we start the game of tag, the only real question is who's the bad one?
Mm-hmm.
And so people say, well, Glenn, those are really hard topics for us, money or sex or kids or in-laws. And I think those topics aren't any harder than any other topic. The problem is you never actually address that topic. You just take turns making each other to blame for that topic. The instant we quit blaming each other and just ask the question, okay, how could we do that differently? Suddenly we find out that's not a very hard question to answer.
But executing it is really hard, isn't it?
Well, it will require each of us to move past our comfort zones. But here's what I see. In all of the call narratives in the scriptures, all the places where God or an angel comes down to earth to speak directly to a person, they never, ever, ever say, hey, I came all the way down here to tell you, just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah, status quo.
Yeah, that's what I want from you. No.
Yeah.
Always, always, always is a challenge to move past what's comfortable and to do that thing that God has put on our heart. And so, yeah, it is scary to really do that different thing, or at least it will seem scary to us. And then I promise you, then you're going to do it, and then you're going to think, why did I think that was going to be so hard? Because it never actually is.
Okay, and I'm going to ask a question closer to home now,
okay,
which would
great.
Be your home.
Yes.
With your wife, Gwen.
Yes.
All right, so you're the expert, which I agree, and your wife, Gwen, is an expert, and you're trying to manage your own disagreements. How do you do that in a healthy way?
We never disagree anymore. That's a great thing. No, that's good.
Yeah. Cut his microphone. We're done
that's
with him.
That's right. This
yeah,
show
yeah.
is over.
Yeah, this is over.
Here's what I see. The instant we start to have anything where it feels like a tag-playing argument, one of us will say, this feels like our old way.
Mm.
And we're just going to stop right there and think, okay, reset.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you really want. I'll tell you what I really want, and then we'll figure out how to put those two things together.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always a perfectly godly way to put those together. Because once we get into the tag game, we're not talking about what we want. We're only talking about why the other one's bad, which, of course, never gets anywhere. So as soon as we feel that argument starting, one of us is going to say, this feels like our old way. Or one of us is going to say, I'm starting to feel like I'm it. Or something like, it just points out the fact, the way we're having this conversation is the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a little break here. We're listening to Live the Promise with Susie Larson, except it's not Susie today. It's Bill Arnold sitting in. We're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering. Hang in there. We got another segment coming up with Glenn. You're not going to want to miss it. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold today sitting in for Susie, and we're talking to Dr. Glenn Pickering. I still have so many questions for him. I'm going to have to start talking like a Las Vegas act just to get them all in because there's a lot to cover still. So, Glenn, let's say, for example, a couple has stopped playing tag. You're it. You're the bad person. And that's not going to happen overnight. That's going to take a
right.
lot of practice.
Yep,
so
maybe
it has stopped a little, and you're maybe saying we're not going to be as stuck as we once were. So, all right, how do we start a new beginning towards happy from crazy?
That's a really great question. Thank you. I think it's important to understand that anything will work, and here's what I mean. I see that everything God has ever created, grass, birds, people, trees, has two things in common. It changes gradually. So it's important to understand that the only thing that actually matters is to get started. So, for example, so you're just talking about me and Gwen. So early on in our marriage, we had an anger problem. She would deal with anger really loud, and I would deal with anger by pretending I didn't have any or shutting down or withdrawing as soon as she got a little bit loud. And
can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
Did that come from your respective families?
Oh, gosh,
Is that the environments you grew up in?
Yes.
Okay, so this is your DNA.
Yes, we're both clearly reflecting the things we learned when we were growing up.
Continue.
Absolutely. Thank you. And so, of course, it became clear to us that that needed to be way, way, way different. I mean, that we were a long way from where we needed to be. And I thought, okay, my first step is going to be this. Instead of when I get to that point where I'm going to feel like I want to shut down and quit talking, I'm going to say one more sentence. One step past where I am right now, which it's so clear to me now in hindsight, and now that I've worked with, you know, thousands and thousands of people over these last 30 years, that that's all we really need. We just need to be thinking, what is step one? What's one small thing I could do that would be moving me in that direction? Now, here's the really cool thing. You're probably already doing it, and here's what I mean. Sometimes people say, well, Glenn, where should I start? And I say, well, tell me about a time when it went right. When you had a conversation that went well, or when you worked well as a team, or when you did something together that was good, tell me about that. And they're going to tell me what they did there that was right, or that was good, or that was helpful. And I say, great. See, you already know how to do it differently. You already know actually how to do it right. So here's what I would like you to do. Next time there's a conflict, you're going to stop playing tag. You're going to think, okay, what could I do differently here? And I want you to do that little simple thing that you do when you're doing it right, whatever that is. Because not only do we not have to figure it all out at one time, we only have to figure out the first small step. Second, that small step is probably something we're already doing. We're just not doing it very thoughtfully or consciously or consistently.
Mm-hmm. We've got about 10 minutes left, and I want to ask you about, isn't step one clearing out 7 million pounds of eggshells in the house?
Here's the really funny thing. We don't do that either. We also clear those out one small step at a time. Like, for example, so then Gwen and I did go for a long time doing anger really, really poorly. So, of course, there was a lot of, let's just say, baggage there.
Mm-hmm. Eggshells on the floor, right?
Yes, exactly.
Tons
and
of
so,
them.
Just like it took us gradually a whole series of steps to get better and better dealing with that anger, the same thing happened with letting go of the old stuff. We just got better and better and better at not clinging to sort of all the bitterness and resentment for the way that it used to be. In fact, that's why I now say to people, the best way to heal the past is to start doing it differently in the present.
I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had to stop and think about that for a minute.
Well, good. I like when I see you.
Usually when I work
there
with George Fraser on Real Recovery, I don't have to think.
you got to love that, George.
Yeah, you got to love that, George. All right, so the eggshells can be removed piece by piece,
right,
little at a time?
Remember I said that's how God does everything. So oftentimes when there's a part of my life where I'm just really convicted, I see it has to be different. Like my first prayer will be, okay, God, make this part of my life totally different. Mm-hmm. And I see it's never how it works. That just like that wall that would get built up between me and Gwen got built up one brick at a time.
Mm-hmm.
What I notice is when we take down the wall, we take down the wall. Guess how?
One brick at a time.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's say we're thinking of a couple,
right?
And they played tag all the time,
mm-hmm.
tons of conflict, and they didn't handle it well,
right?
And now, do you have a story that you can share of a couple who actually learned how to dismantle the tag playing game, and they learned how to work through conflict, and is now actually in that happy state we talk about.
No, but
they're
I keep
not crazy
for
anymore.
That. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, that's a long setup to go for nothing.
Thank you.
Oh,
that's
my goodness.
Right. So I was just talking to a couple yesterday who I've worked with now for I don't know several months, and it's been just so fun and fascinating to watch them just go through one step at a time, learning about the game of tag, recognizing it when it happens, being able to kind of stop it in the middle, and then eventually being able to not play it at all, and then gradually starting to talk to each other about what they really want, and then gradually getting better at listening instead of getting all defensive, and then finding out, wow, now that we don't play tag, we listen carefully, we don't defend, we're finding out, wow, there's a lot that we actually agree about. And we actually kind of like figuring out ideas and coming up with solutions for both of us. And I could just like literally see them like glowing in my office. It was so fun.
Mm.
And here's why. Sometimes people say, well, Glenn, what you do is magical. It's incredible. And I think, well, thank you. But here's what I know. See, God is this powerful force that draws us towards one another. When the scriptures say God is love, that's not kidding. God is this powerful force that binds me to all the people in my life. So it's not that I have to, as a counselor, create that force or make those people be connected. They already are connected powerfully with God's love. If I can just get them to quit doing the stuff that gets in the way of that, the tag playing, the fighting, and the arguing, what they're going to find out is, wow, there's this amazing connection between the two of us. Right. Once I quit pushing that cork down into water and just let it go, guess what happens?
Well, it's to the top.
Right to the top, right? Yeah. And then people find out, wow, there's this amazing connection we have.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which you always had.
Mm-hmm.
But now that you're not doing all the things that get in the way of seeing that, that connection just gets more and more clear. And then we get better and better at living from that place and honoring that connection, which, of course, then the connection just keeps getting stronger and stronger.
Okay, what about the couples that feel that the damage is beyond repair because they spent a decade of dysfunctional tag playing and what's been built up between them is just painful, almost like right. our caller from the first half hour
right.
who said we're sort of at that point where we right. just got to make it stop.
Yep.
Can these damaged couples return from their pain and thrive again?
Yes. In fact, what I really have come to absolutely believe with my whole heart, not as a cliche, but really because I've seen now so many thousands of people go through this process, it is never too late. There's no such thing.
Well, that's going to be very encouraging for listeners, I'm sure, because that's not how people feel.
I know. It's so easy to give up. Which is why, see, that's why our friends are always wrong. The first thing they tell us is to just quit, give up, throw in the towel. It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, well, I'll just be quick about this. I love to read stories of people who have near-death experiences, you know, who died, cross over, and then come back and tell us a little bit about what it's like on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And over they say, there's only two things we bring with us, love and wisdom. So all the people we love on this side, we still love on the other side. And all the lessons that we learn here, we take with us.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it really, really clear to me, from God's perspective, there's two reasons why we're here, to love and to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if I'm in a relationship and I just keep doing the same dumb thing over and over again and don't learn, I'm really, literally not being on that path that God would want me to be on. It's mm-hmm. so important to keep learning and growing.
Mm-hmm. So the big question in life is, what do you want? And
right.
obviously where there is a stake that high, that takes some soul searching. And there's obviously people that are stuck in a relationship that they go, why, my expectations are not being met. I had different expectations.
Right.
Did I not articulate those, or do I just not like the way things are going right now?
Right. Or a way more penetrating question to ask ourselves is this, or am I behaving in a way that's actually preventing my expectations from becoming true?
Now you just got personal.
I know.
And,
but it's, you know, Jesus said, well, you know, you got to start with the log in your own eye. I have to ask myself, if this relationship is not giving me what I want, okay, what is it that I'm not giving to the relationship? That has to be my first question.
Mm-hmm. I mean, two broken sinners in a relationship, what do you expect? Right.
Right. We're going to have struggles. And if you look back at the first relationship, Eve ate the apple and then gave it to Adam. And you notice then at the end when God comes and says, what have you done? And Adam says, well, you know, the woman that you gave me gave me this apple.
Mm-hmm.
So, God, it could be Eve's fault or it could be your fault, but it's for sure not mine. And when people ask me and going, hey, did you guys make up the game of tag? I think you have no idea how old that game is.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, I know for sure that there's people out there that are in strained relationships, and they just don't know what they're going to do tonight with it, and they're in pain, right. and they're just miserable, and I feel sorry for them, and would you be willing to maybe pray for these couples and these individuals that are just so struggling?
I so would.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, dear Lord, you've laid upon our hearts to care about all those people who are struggling, all your children who are so, so seeking your face in prayer and in their relationships. I ask that each of them, Lord, feel your comforting presence, your gentle guiding hand, and that they feel that gentle guiding hand leading them to this place of clarity, not judgment, not self-condemnation, just clarity about, okay, here is what I could be doing differently. And God, I ask that you give them the courage and the strength to see that vision, to claim that vision, and to live into that vision. We praise your holy name. Amen.
Well, Glenn, this has been a wonderful hour, and I know that there is so much to learn about ourselves and about how we fit into relationships and how we need to learn more about ourselves. You can go on the webpage. You can send this episode out to your friends who might want to hear it, and we'll have all Glenn's information up on the webpage as well. So that wraps up our time. I appreciate being here in Susie's chair. This has been awfully fun. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Grace. Thank you all listeners that called in, and then people that expected to hear Susie today and got me. Sorry.
You're not it.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend, everyone. God bless.